And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 201. I'm Silas Lindenstein. Today is a special Black and a Half edition. The Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. But today it's a one-on-one interview that I had with actor, director, Sheila Omi. She is a Iranian actress in the new Apple TV, not new, in the Apple TV show Tehran. It, in case you're not aware, you know, there's so much streaming. I feel like good shows get lost sometimes. And I wasn't aware even, I watch TV all the time, too much, if you ask my family. And I had missed the season one of Tehran. And I found out about season two when I was reached out to about interviewing Sheila for the podcast. And I was like, what is this show? So I went and checked out the first season pilot episode. And it is intriguing. It is amazing. I really love it. I mentioned in this interview, it's one of the few shows that's actually in three languages, English, Farsi, and Hebrew. They're all spoken in it. Now there's it's subtitled. Like half the thing is subtitled because they're speaking different languages all the time. So that is an adjustment. Casual TV watching, if you're not used to, I know a lot of people watch movies that are subtitled, but they don't always watch TV that is completely. But you need that for this if you don't speak all three languages. And if you're listening to this podcast, you at least speak one of those, I would think. So really exciting, great interview. I love this woman. She has such an interesting backstory and her, what she's done in theater and transitioning into kind of like a star in Apple TV. She's done a couple things now with them, but season two is out. I want you to, we don't spoil anything about this. We learn a lot about Sheila and how she got here to where she is and her philosophies on life. And we ask her the seven questions. So there's no spoilers in this. So you can watch Tehran at your leisure. I am currently binge watching season one as this records. Season two comes out May 17th. I'm not sure if this is airing before or after, but that's when it comes out. So check it out. Okay. Now, Samantha's on assignment for this episode, so she wasn't involved, but she'll be back soon. Hey, I want to give a big shout out to our Patreon listeners. Big shout out to Keith Nagel, Stefan Ward, Tara Widener. Thank you for being a supporter of the show as we took a little break here with the holidays and sort of Easter, right? Okay, I was tired. Kept doing episodes. It was crazy. So here we are back, episode 201. We're rocking it, starting off with killer interview. And thank you, for supporting the show. And if you too want to become a Patreon listener of the show, a Patreon supporter of the show, you can go to Patreon, that's patreon.com/blackandahalf. And for as little as $1 a month, you can help support the show. You know, you could be a Inner Circle member like those three, like the three I mentioned just a minute ago, and get your name mentioned as being a supporter, or you can be anonymous. That's okay. We have anonymous supporters of the show, so we appreciate them. We appreciate everybody. Yeah. Or please go to Apple Podcast and give us a 5-star review. That would also be awesome. And hey, I'm also going to be dropping new episodes out of my home buying podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. That's also available on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to this. You can find that one. It's all about the home buying process. Share it with your friends. Share it with your family. It's another way to support this show is by listening to that other one. All right. That's my spiel. So, I'm really excited about this episode. I've been watching a lot of good TV lately. I don't currently watch anything that's more in the espionage kind of drama, thrillers like that. I've been watching a lot of comedies, a lot of sci-fi, but I don't watch this world. And so it was nice to jump into it. usually this is kind of movie I like to watch. And what TV shows are just like really super long movies. They're like movies if Peter Jackson, they're TV shows. They're like Peter Jackson TV shows, right? Like 10 hours, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, this is great. Check it out on Apple TV and, or, you know, use your friend's account, whatever. Who cares? Just watch it. No, Apple TV. You're listening. Just get a subscription like a good person. Okay. A lot of good shows on there. Insecure. The Severance. I love that show. It's a musical, Bridget Dune. It's a parody of that. There's a lot of good shows on Apple TV. So I think it's well worth the, I think it's like $7.99 a month. Don't quote me, but it's pretty cheap. You should check it out. Anyhow, folks, I want you to open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 201. Sheila, Omi, and Apple TV's Tehran.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Hello, Silas.
Hello. Hey, I was looking you up. I try not to do too much digging into my guests because I like to discover right away, like on them. But I had to look you. I watched the first episode of Tehran, and I was blown away. Kind of, I was very excited. It was, it wasn't until the season two was coming out that I realized I watch a lot of international stuff like on Netflix and different things. So I never know what I'm going to watch, whether it's actually based, like if it's meant to be in America to begin with. Yeah. So, I thought Toronto's pretty exciting. Like, I don't know how many shows I watched that there's three languages spoken in the film, right?
Yeah. You have to be a highbrow audience to watch this show just because of the subtitles and the three or sometimes four languages that are spoken.
And at first, I didn't even know if I was supposed to. I didn't know how my video was set up. I was like, am I supposed to be reading this? I thought there might be a little like when they're speaking Farsi at first. Cause it was subtitling on what I was watching in Hebrew. And I'm like, am I supposed to be know what's going on? Maybe that's part of the mystery. I don't know quite yet. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to cheat. And then I was like, okay, now I think I needed this. I think I needed to follow this. You have a fascinating story though. You're 79. You escaped from Iran, right?
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Do you have a lot of memories from
a lot of memories? Oh my, Iran was so beautiful.
Yeah.
I have a lot of one. Yeah. Because I was, 10 years old when, and we happened to be here. A lot of people escaped, but we, by the grace of God, happened to be in LA. My dad had some work to do, but we couldn't return. Unless we wanted to die.
You're right. Yeah.
So we couldn't return. And so we went from riches to rags overnight, but survived.
Yeah.
It puts everything in perspective.
There's a lot of survivors. I know there's a comic named Melissa Shoshani. She was a comic up in Seattle. You know her? Yeah. I've only heard pieces of the story of her surviving, you know. The changes that happened in the families. Mm-hmm. So where did you film for this?
Tehran?
For Tehran. Yeah. Where is it filmed actually?
Tehran. We filmed in Greece, Athens. And it was the first time I was ever in Greece.
Okay.
And oh, my joy.
Yeah.
It was just incredible to be in Greece. And, you know, and for me, because I was very heavily involved in Persian theater.
Okay.
For years and years, I do plays in Farsi and travel the globe. So for someone who loves theater as much as I do, to be in the land of theater, you know, that where it all started for us,
yeah,
was just magic.
I've always wanted to go on, you know, one of the first amphitheaters and, you know, scream some Dionysus. Quotes, some warm-ups that I used to do. I have a theater. I'm from a theater background as well. So I was really excited to see that on you.
You know, I went to Epidavros, and that's it's an 11,000 seat theater in the round. And it's true that if you go to the center, send someone up to the last seat. If you drop a coin, they hear it.
Yeah.
It's incredible acoustics. And since you're into theater, last thing I want to say is that that theater, Epidavros, was built right next to one of the first hospitals in Greece, like thousands of years ago, because they believed that if you are ill, if you have any physical ailment, that one of the ways to heal is through watching theater, and the catharsis that happens by you watching theater is going to help your body heal.
And I believe it. No, I absolutely believe that. Did you have the theater bug before you...
Oh, big
moved
time.
America?
No, not before I moved to America.
Okay.
No, it happened for me in high school. And I think it was because of all the trauma that me and my family had gone through because of, you know, being uprooted and the revolution and hearing about all the, don't want to get into it, but it was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Oh yeah.
But, and then my mom kept moving us. So from age 10 until, so from the sixth grade until the 10th grade, every year I was in a new school. And so that's kind of traumatizing. So when I finally landed in high school, which was Van Nuys High School, it's a high school for, it's a performing arts magnet.
Okay.
So that's when I discovered theater, and theater was so healing for me. So, and I wasn't very good. So I would audition.
Hard to believe.
I wouldn't get a part. When I wouldn't get a part, I would work backstage. I was the prop mistress or a stage director. Yeah, I mean, that's stage director, stage manager.
Mm-hmm.
And stage director, right. But yeah, so I had the theater bug. And I also never imagined that I would ever be able to do film or television, because at that time there were no representation of me at all. So for me, acting in film and TV was like, this is what the gods do. This is not what I get to do. And then I thought, you know, and I never wanted to move to New York to continue theater, and LA, I mean, there is wonderful theater in LA. Don't get me wrong. I'm actually an Ovation Award voter.
Okay.
So I do see a lot of good theater, but it isn't the same as, you know, being in New York, and you can't really make a career of it. So,
you know, I had a similar one of the reasons I never pursued film for a long time was I never saw anyone that looked like me, because people would never know what I was. They would just kind of, I referred to myself as an ethnic utility player, because they would just put me in whatever they were. I would get people, all the people would ask me, are you Middle Eastern? No. Are you Latino? No, I'm no. No, I'm, what, did, like, I was thinking about how great, I was watching the show and going like, this is wonder, like, when else before streaming, who would have taken the chance on this show? Right. And I was thinking about all these great actors who are getting a chance to like delve into the, where they don't have to be the bad guy for one. Right.
Yeah.
Like what an incredible opportunity both Apple has presented and then the producers to have platforms and just places that you can put this on and find an audience that will enjoy it. right? Like,
first of all, thank God for streaming.
Yeah.
And for me personally, thank God for Apple, because Apple put me in my very first major television role was also on Apple TV. It was Little America.
Okay. Yeah. So I saw clips of that.
The fact that they trusted me, mm-hmm. and then, but you know, being in Tehran, it's just amazing. I'm so grateful to streaming and Apple.
So did you find, early on in acting, did you find yourself were you cast in like what were the kind of roles you were being put in when you were first doing it? Cause I mean, you're definitely clearly a veteran here. So like,
okay. So early on in acting, I stuck to theater. And so because I had the great fortune of already being in a theater company, and it was an Iranian theater company, meaning that, I mean, it's Iranian American. Yeah. We were doing plays in Persian. So it didn't matter to me that I'm not acting in English. I'm acting. And it didn't matter to me that I didn't really go after a film and television because I already had a job.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Touring the world, playing amazing roles as you do in theater. Right. So it saved me from having to start at the way most actors start. You know, you start with co-star roles, yeah. And after a while you get to do guest star roles. And after a while, if you're lucky, you get to do a series regular. So I was able to bypass that by just playing amazing leading female roles in a theater company in Persian, traveling the world. But I'll be honest with you. When I first started doing film and TV, because of all the theater, mm-hmm. you know, Michael Caine put it that theater is like you're building a house.
Yeah.
Film acting, it's like you're doing microsurgery. Mm-hmm. And they're very different.
Yeah.
So it took a while for me to be able to figure out how to act for film.
Right.
Yeah.
I
still struggle. I still struggle.
Yeah. No, but as somebody, I went through the same thing, you know, and in doing it now it's so weird. I remember my agent saying, you got to stop that. Stop acting, you theater people. You got to just do this.
Just stop what you're doing. Stop
what got it, yeah. you to what made you do the transition to the film? Was it the opportunities that were just an opportunity came up, or?
No, the transition was, so there was a theater company that I worked for about 13 years. Mm-hmm. And this was a theater company that was spearheaded by a gentleman named Hushang Tozi, who's a brilliant writer, director, and his wife, Shore Akhdashlu, who is, she is a wonderful actress. She's on The Expanse. She, mm-hmm. She was nominated for an Oscar and she's won an Emmy. So the two of them created this theater company that I had the pleasure of working in for 13 years, but it was like time to go. Like you can't just keep, you know, being there. So when I stopped being in that theater company, then I directed theater myself. I directed a play for the Hollywood Fringe Festival. And we won a lot of accolades and we won Best Play Revival. It was an adaptation of Butterflies Are Free.
Okay.
And then I realized that if I wanted to continue the path, then I would have had to write my own plays in Persian and to direct them and to produce them or I could start auditioning as an actor for other people's projects in film and TV, because really he was Hushang Tozi, is pretty much the top of the line you could get into in the Persian theater mm-hmm. scene. So it's like, I'd already hit the ceiling and where do I go from here? Film and TV.
I sometimes, you know, what I love interviewing folks like you is it's a discovery. There's a discovery of worlds of the arts that I'm not even aware is going mm-hmm. on. Like I had no idea until talking to you that there was a Persian theater scene outside of the other theater scene. Like when I was I was a stand-up comic for a long time, and I had no idea there was a second comic scene in Seattle that from all the black comics were working. Most of the black comics were working in a different circuit. And we're like, how long have you been doing this? You just started like 10 years. I'm like, and I've never met you. How is this possible? You know,
right.
Like yeah. That's pretty incredible. Are you bilingual or do you try as well?
I'm bilingual. To be honest with you, when I speak Farsi, like I wouldn't feel comfortable, like, you know, how you and I are sitting, I wouldn't feel comfortable in this situation. I'd have to reach for words so I can, so I speak Farsi, I'm bilingual.
Yeah.
But how do I put it? I can memorize things and sound amazing on stage.
Oh, okay. But somebody, you know, that speaks it all day would be able to tell that you're not.
Exactly. Like okay. If I were to watch the news in Farsi, I would understand maybe 30% of it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff I don't understand. There's a lot of words. There's a lot of words.
That's some amazing trickery then, because that. Yeah, I would never have guessed that from watching the show. That's wonderful. Is that, as an actor, so a language that you know the language, but you're, I mean, so you would consider English as your native. Do you consider that then your native language?
So technically Farsi is, because I was born in Iran, but because of growing up here, English has become my native language. So I'm much more comfortable, obviously.
So when you're doing a role that's in all Farsi, is it like speaking, I don't know, I hear people talk about technobabble, like when you're on a detective show or a medical show and you don't, like, you learn these words and you're not quite sure.
Yeah.
Do you have that when you tackle a role that you're.
At first. Yeah. Okay. At first. Yeah. Sometimes at first and forth. Yes. But I, you know, I prepare enough that the role, that the words become part of me and I understand what I'm saying. I'm not just blah, 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 doing the techno babble.
Here's the question. Is there a sense of humor that you find is a little different between the like Persian community and then
the Persian
plain English?
So funny.
Yeah?
Jokes Farsi are so funny. And the sense of humor, like anytime you go to a proper party as an Iranian and with Iranians around you, at some point, two things happen. One is at some point, and this was more with the older generation, they'd sit in a circle and start singing songs. But the other thing that happens is they sit around in a circle and start telling jokes. And there are millions of jokes and they're so funny. And I never remember any. It's like I die laughing. And then, you know, the next event you go to, it's just, I can't remember to tell it. But yeah, the Persians are very funny.
But is very there, funny. Do you find, but what they will, where the humor is. Okay. So like when I remember when I first moved, I visited Russia when I was young and I realized I was like, there was this level of like the audience was cracking up at the physical comedy more than anything. And I was like, I don't think where we're from, they would laugh as hard at this as they did there. And so ever since then, I've been fascinated by the idea that, like, I feel like the English really love wordplay and just cutting each other down, right? They just love, or the British rather, they love to just cut each other really hard. Is there something that you're like, oh, Persians love to do this to each other?
Wordplay is a big one. And you know, Persian is such a beautiful language and it's so rich and it's so melodic and there's so much incredible poetry that it's very easy to do wordplay and be super funny. Mm-hmm. With the wordplay, and you know, a lot of these jokes are in a wordplay where someone's not understanding the word, but it's just I couldn't do it justice.
What's a good Persian comedy? What should I
You know, Maz Jobrani, he's a friend of mine. He's a comedian. He's an Iranian American. He's a super funny comedian. And so if you go on his Instagram, he has the Persian word of the week. Okay. And yeah, so it's Maz, M-A-Z Jobrani, J-O-B-R-A-N-I.
Yeah, because I've noticed, you know, unless somebody is really into watching a lot of foreign film, and as I'm a film critic, you know, here in Seattle too, so I stretch out, I don't think we get exposed to much. I don't think people see a lot of foreign comedies.
Right.
Like, I remember the first time I went to the Seattle International Film Festival and saw a comedy from Brazil, and I was like, you know, I feel like we as Americans always want to watch like other cultures be super serious. Right. Because I can't think of, like, I was like, yeah, you know, Tehran probably has its funny side. Right. There's got to be a funny side. Not everyone's into espionage at all times.
Yeah. And I tell you, it's because my family's also really funny. My dad was so funny that many of us, I feel like, wouldn't have survived the trauma of the revolution if it wasn't for comedy and funny and making fun of everything and telling jokes. Comedy is such an important thing. It's so important. And all the plays I did, by the way, in the Persian community, all the plays that are famous plays are funny. Persians don't like drama. I mean, they don't go to see plays. They don't go to see dramatic plays.
Oh, really?
They go to laugh. Oh, yeah. Never pay for that.
Sometimes I'm like, man, if it wasn't for the Academy, if it wasn't for the awards shows that I have to vote on, I'm like, sometimes I watch all these. December's a depressing month for me because I'm watching all these films for the awards season that are really heavy. They're very dark. And I'm like, man, like, come January, I just want comedies. That's all I want to watch this, man.
Yeah.
So your character in Tehran, what do you think the joy is for that character? Like, where do you find do you approach that when you look at a character? What do you try to find in the character? I always try to find joy. Is that something that you look at?
I'm going to steal that. And yeah, from now on, thank you for that. That's I'm going to look into that from now on, to find the joy in the, because that sounds brilliant. I've never thought of that before. But now that you mentioned it, I think the joy for Nahid is her husband. I think that the joy for her is to go on vacation, maybe go to Hawaii with her husband, and for it to just be the two of them, and to sit in front of the television set and to watch like one of her favorite Turkish TV shows that are up in Farsi, and for them to watch and laugh and just to be together. It's such a love story. Their story. That I think that's her joy, is him.
Well, that's sweet. I like that.
I'm
looking at the time. So here on Black and a Half, we have, the first time someone comes on the show, we have seven questions that we like to ask them. They're the Black and a Half world famous seven questions. Okay. Just to get to know you a little bit. That's sort of, you know, I'm putting it out there. So eventually they will be.
I hope I don't disappoint.
Oh, that's fine. Okay. Number one, what are you most nerdy about? So like, is there something you just dive into more than anything else and they're super knowledgeable about?
Yeah, super knowledgeable. So I have a Bachelor of Science in Biological Anthropology. So I can talk your head off about apes and monkeys and their different social systems, the gorilla social systems, the bonobo chimpanzee social systems, the rhesus monkeys, our connection to monkeys, what we learn from them. Apes, you know, we are human apes. These are called non-human apes. You know, we're all apes. And it is so fascinating, Silas, that don't get me started because we don't have time. I would love to come back, talk your head off about that one day.
That is literally the first time anyone has told me that was what they're nerdy about. I love that. Eve. Okay. I'm gonna have to talk to you again at some point. Okay.
Okay.
Number two. Okay. What's something that you love to eat?
I love to eat pasta. And I love to eat my, so I create my own pesto just fresh basil and lots of lemon juice. And I have lemons that I get from my trees. So it's my own pesto and it's a non-dairy pesto. So I do non-dairy Parmesan in it, but it's so good. And I also don't add garlic. So you can have as much of this pesto and you don't smell weird. And it's so good.
Okay. Number three, what's something that you love to drink?
Yeah. So I don't do alcohol. Every now and then, you know, a little wine. Mm-hmm. I heard a very wise person say the stupidest thing you could do is to put alcohol in your bloodstream because it is a neurotoxin.
Yeah.
So thank God I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a very special water purifier.
That's fine.
And I used to go to Sherman Oaks and drag these 5-gallon glass jars of this water. It's this energy structured oxygenated water. And I love this water. It tastes like melted snow. And when I got second season of Tehran, I bought us the... the water purifier system. So I no longer have to go to Sherman Oaks to drag this stuff home and get a backache.
That's hilarious.
So
I love our water. That's fine. Okay.
Thank you.
Number four, what kind of music do you love?
So I was just in New York and I took a class about the power of sound and music on the human psyche. And so the music that I'm totally into right now are Tibetan singing bowls played by this incredible musician. His name is Alexandre Tanou, T-A-N-N-O-U-S, Alexandre. And just listening to him play these singing bowls puts you in such a state of bliss. That is my music right now.
I love it. I want to hear it.
Okay.
Number five, what do you love to create?
This is a tough one. Because obviously I love to craft and create characters and act. But it's a love-hate relationship that it's so hard for me. So I can't, you know, so love to create. Oh, because, and it's work. Of course, I love it, but it's work.
Mm-hmm.
So, love to create. Can we come back to that?
Yeah, sure. It might connect to something else. Number six, what's a game you love to play?
A game I love to play.
Yeah.
Oh. Boy, now I feel like I don't play games. Maybe I need to find a game I love to play.
Any board games or that you played as a kid or anything?
Monopoly, but I'm so bad at it that I'm always one of the first to lose.
You know what?
But Monopoly. I'll say Monopoly.
Being bad at Monopoly is kind of a good thing. You know, it's not.
Is it a good thing?
I think so, because you know, if you win, you got to be kind of ruthless, right?
You have to be. Yay! Yeah. No. I love Monopoly. Okay. Losing is Monopoly.
Okay. The last question: in 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
That she was one of the forces that helped to make people have different practices with the environment. So she helped to save the ecosystem and the environment.
I think that's a great create too, right there.
know, and you know, and for people to realize how close we are with animals and with the animal world, and that that no matter how bad sometimes we feel like we have it, or you know, with the politics or what's going on in our lives, that there are billions of animals on this planet that are just enjoying life. And life is such a miracle, and it's such a gift, regardless of what you come onto this planet as. Yay that you get to come onto this planet as a human being, but that, but it's just really incredible to be alive, and I wish people would realize that more and give more love to one another and to the animals, and protect their environments and just make it better.
That's terrific. Sheila Almy, thank you so much for having me, for coming on and joining me for this.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
I am looking forward to binging season 2 as it comes out. I guess they release weekly, so I guess I'll have to calm the bitches down. But I'll finish season 1 and be right there for the premiere May 17th of Tehran. So
Silas, season 2 gets so good. It gets good.
That's awesome.
So I hope you.
Okay. I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for you.
Thank you
so much. You're appreciated. And that was it. That was my interview with Sheila. It wasn't she fantastic? I really enjoyed that. This is, and I feel like, don't you feel like there was a special connection? I feel like she enjoyed this interview more than any other interview she did today. It was a press day for her, but didn't you get that sense that she got different questions on this show? And that's what it's about. Why go on other shows and just get the same old questions? Come to Black and a Half, where you can be asked anything and get the 7 questions, the world famous 7 questions that nobody knows, but one day they will. So anyway, thank you for listening to the show and being a supporter. You are my favorite listener. You, that's right. You listening right now, you are my favorite. And I want you all to have a very merry Black and a Half. Live long and prosper.